This is Press Play on 89.9 KCRW. I'm Jonathan Bastian, in for Madeline Brand. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed a bill this week that bans children under 14 from creating social media accounts. There's been a lot of research showing social media has caused an alarming spike in depression, anxiety, self-harm, and suicide among American teens. Experts describe it as a mental health crisis exacerbated by the pandemic, but began by the rise of the smartphone. Joining me now is Zach Rausch. He's a research scientist at New York University. He's also the lead researcher on a new book from his colleague Jonathan Haidt. It's called The Anxious Generation: How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. Zach, thanks for joining us. Welcome.
Jonathan, thanks so much for having me on, and hello to all your listeners.
Well, it's great to have you, and let's jump in here. So your research suggests that the smartphone led to a major shift in the childhood experience in the 2010s. So walk us through what happened then and what that looks like now.
So when Jonathan Haidt, who's my mentor, and I, we were working to try to understand what was happening to young people, because we were noticing that, you know, right around in the early 2010s, at first we were noticing what was happening on college campuses. And that was college students were going to mental health centers more and more and more. And what I was looking into was just how big of a problem this was. What we noticed was this wasn't just happening on campus. This was happening among adolescents 10 to 19. And this wasn't just happening in the United States. This was happening all across the English-speaking world, all across the Nordic nations in Western Europe. So this was an international issue. And what we realized as we were doing this research and ultimately now writing this book was that childhood really completely transformed from one that what we would call is primarily play-based, where kids are mostly in person, interacting with each other in real life, and how that very rapidly moved onto smartphones and social media platforms into what we call the phone-based childhood. And this phone-based childhood has had devastating impacts on young people's mental health, their capacity to learn, and capacity to flourish.
Do you have a sense of just how much time, let's say, teens are spending on their phone? And it's interesting because you do talk about this as well, that they're on their phone more and less with their peers. So there's a correlation there.
So in 2009, just about 50% of American high schoolers are using social media almost every day. By 2012, just a couple years, we're up to 75%. So just a couple years, we're moving our adolescent social life onto these platforms. By 2015, just about 1 in 5 teen girls are now using social media platforms more than 40 hours per week. We're just talking about social media. And that's 2015. So by 2022, recent Pew Research report found that 46% of teens are online almost constantly. This is the new phone-based childhood where we are forever elsewhere. I mean, I myself experienced this with my own life, and the lives of teens are no different. And they're spending 7 to 9 hours on average per day on screens for entertainment kind of use, and just about 5 hours per day on social media platforms. This is the average.
Yeah, 5 hours, I mean, is a staggering amount. And you talk about how that has become the new childhood. And I know this is kind of like the crux of it and the billion-dollar question here, but what is it about, let's say, those 5 hours that creates such really devastating mental health outcomes?
So it's a great question. And there are many mechanisms through which this is harming young people. But one that's the simplest, and I think something that all of us can easily intuitively understand, is the opportunity cost, which is all of this time that is spent on screens and on social media is time not doing the thing that humans need to do to be healthy, to flourish. And what are those things? In-person social interaction has steeply declined since 2010. Sleeping, also big decline. Right. Time with family, Time doing almost absolutely everything is being pushed out because these platforms are specifically designed to maximize engagement. They're designed to keep users hooked to their phone throughout the day. And so we're constantly being pulled away from the real world where we develop skills and we do all the things that we need to feel good.
Yeah, and I think part of the idea here is that there's a better version of us out in the real world when we're face to face with people versus, let's say, Instagram, where there's been really, I think, devastating research looking at how there's major questions of body image issues for young women, which can cause depression, anxiety. I mean, I think there's something, though, in the nature of some of these apps that is very harmful to a young developing brain.
Absolutely. So what we need to really put ourselves into the mind of is what is it like to be an adolescent?
Right.
What are the things that adolescents care about? Number one is fitting in to your friend group. It is an enormous time of physical, emotional, bodily changes. It's a very insecure time, and our brains are not fully developed, and we're super sensitive to social cues. So what happens when social media changes from before 2010? It's typically more about social networking. You have your friends that you can post pictures of cats or whatever. You're on a laptop, and now you have new kinds of platforms where you have a front-facing camera on your phone. You are platforming yourself to an audience to be judged. So likes and retweets, and now you can compare your numbers to your friends' numbers. And it's not just with your friends, it's now with the whole world. This is what's changed. It's that we're all now standing on a stage 24/7 being judged by the world.
Yeah. Well, let's also explore this because I feel like with every technology, right, there's kind of the reason that it could be beneficial, and then there's what we could maybe call like the shadow side of it. And I think, though, for some, online communities are the only places that they feel safe. I mean, let's talk about kids and teens who identify as queer, because that's a place, let's say if you're in a rural conservative area, that's the only community that you might find. And I think that some of these online communities were hailed as safe spaces. So how do you think that factors into this conversation?
Yeah, Jonathan, this is such an important question because I think that there's some, in my view, a misunderstanding here about what it is that these platforms offer and what is possible. So I think that it is absolutely the case that, kids from marginalized backgrounds don't find real-world community that they feel a part of. And this is a problem that we really need to solve. But I don't think the solution is Instagram or TikTok, right? Because just if we take a big step back and just think about what these platforms are, they are not designed for the well-being of really anyone, and especially not kids who are already struggling. So TikTok, for example, is not designed to foster human connection. It's designed to keep you hooked to watch very short videos of people over and over again. And so these are not safe spaces in many ways. And just an example of this, a recent Facebook executive, his name's Arturo Bejar, he was reporting on some research that was done at Instagram. And what he found was among 13 to 15-year-old children, they found that just about 15% say that they have had some sort of unwanted sexual solicitation within the last 7 days. Right. So, kind of my point is that it's absolutely true that we need to find better ways to help marginalized kids. But this is not the place to do it.
Well, walk us through then a few recommendations that you and Jonathan Haidt come up with. And I mean, if I have this right, it's somewhere in the age of 16, there should be no access to social media. Talk about, again, what you think is the proper way to roll this out and why that number is so important to you.
Yeah. So the contribution that John and I are hoping to bring here is, from a social scientific point of view, is that we're stuck in what are called collective action problems. And what I mean by that is if you are a 13-year-old girl and you decide that you don't want to use Instagram anymore, you could close down your account, But by doing so, you have just made yourself an outcast,
Right.
ostracized from your entire social friend group. So there are no incentives to do this. And if anything, the incentives are against you. And you might even feel worse if you decide to get off. So everyone is stuck in this trap that nobody wants to be the only one not on these platforms. And no parent wants to be the only one who's saying, no, honey, you can't go on to these platforms because it's not safe. But now you're an outcast. So what we need to do is act together. By acting together, we get everybody out of that trap. So we propose four norms to get kids and parents out of these social traps. The first is no smartphones until age 14. We need to get smartphones out of middle school because this is where the harm seems to be biggest. You know, you can give flip phones. Millennials had flip phones and it didn't seem to have done much harm to them. The second is no social media until age 16. The third is really pushing for phone-free schools. We think this is going to have a huge impact on learning, but also creating that group effect where you could have an entire school without phones 7 hours a day. And the fourth, and this one's a little more difficult, is bringing back much more free play, independence, and responsibility in the real world where kids can go out and play with each other. Because at the same time that kids were moving on to this immersive virtual world, we were kind of clamping down on kids' abilities to be out and playing unsupervised out in the real world.
Really, really good recommendations. And I also just want to point out that, you know, we as adults are struggling with this mightily. I struggle with it. And you see it in young parents who, to be honest, I know every young parent is doing the best job that they can, but so often you'll see parents on their phones the entire time that they're with kids, they're outside. I mean, it's like there has to also be examples set among those of us that we hope have better executive functioning than a 10-year-old. But the point is that this is really, really difficult stuff for all of us.
I hear this all the time, which is how could we tell kids not to go on phones when we are so addicted ourselves? And I hear that. And our brains are more developed or better able to handle the constant notifications throughout the day. Just imagine what it's like to be 11, 12, 13, trying to manage all of that, plus all the, you know, ups and downs of normal daily life anyway. So this is a really a child welfare issue. This is an issue that we can also make huge strides on because this is really the only bipartisan topic that people can agree upon. Of course, there are other issues that need to be confronted, but this is a really great place for us to start.
That's right. I mean, if Ron DeSantis and NYU professors can get behind this, I think we're onto something. Is that right?
Exactly. And this is and it's not just bipartisan here in the US. It's in many countries around the world. There is such a deep hunger for this change, and I think we're at a tipping point.
I've been speaking with Zach Rausch, a research scientist at New York University. He was also the lead researcher on the new book by the social psychologist Jonathan Haidt. It's called The Anxious Generation: How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. It's out now. Zach, thanks for the time. I appreciate the conversation.
Thank you so much.
Press Play is off on Monday for Cesar Chavez Day, but we have a special show from Public Radio producers The Kitchen Sisters. It's hosted by Frances McDormand, and you don't want to miss it. And Madeline Brand will be back on Tuesday. She'll have the latest legal news and analysis with Press Play's legal eagle, Jessica Levinson. Coming up, is Godzilla now a gay icon?
It's not June yet. It's not Pride Month yet, but Godzilla lights up with a big pink spine, and I just felt, ooh, gay pride.
What to watch and what to skip this weekend, that's next on Press Play.